My grandparents was Timotheus Sneewe and my grandmother was Lena Hoffman. They told us about our indigenous side. You know that one of the things is the language. But of course of the oppression system, we couldn't use our language. It is not so proper as it was right in the beginning. But we speak our Nama language.
What I can remember about singing is that when the heroes fled to the neighboring countries like Botswana and South Africa, they were suppressed in those countries and they were not allowed to speak their own languages. So they started to sing as a way of communicating with one another. And that today you still find Hereros living in South Africa who cannot speak the language, who have lost their culture, but who know that their four parents were coming from Namibia.
Ida Hoffman, head of the Nama Genocide Committee, and Esther Muyengwe, head of the foundation of the Hereroro Genocide, are singing in remembrance of their culture, language, and ancestors exterminated between 1904 and 1908. The two women spoke to RFI's Marche du Monde programme in 2014. Their voices can be heard in the exhibition at the Shoah Memorial.
The Germans have was intruders who have come into our country. And they have come over to wipe all the Namas and the Herero-speaking people out so that they take over the land, they have taken over our resources, and they have killed our people.
In the late 19th century scramble for Africa, Germany got control of Southwest Africa, the territory now known as Namibia. About 80,000 Herero and 20,000 Nama were living in the central and southern part of the country at the time. They were mainly cattle herders, and their chiefs, such as Nama warlord Hendrik Witboy and Herero chief Maherero, were often in conflict with one another. The Germans made the most of this, confiscating rich Herero lands and many cattle. In 1904, the Herero rose up against mistreatment by settlers in the small town of Okahanja, killing more than 100 Germans. Some of Esther Muyengwe's ancestors took part in the revolt.
In my family, of course, we had people like Kaishen Wamuhoko, who is from my clan, and he rebelled as well. So there was people in my family who were standing up and rebelling and fighting against the Germans to take over the country or the land as well as cattle.
The Germans, led by General Lothar von Trotter, retaliated with force at the Battle of Waterberg. Not just warriors, but women and children along with their cattle fled towards the Kalahari Desert. It was the first phase of the genocide, says Leonor Faber-Jonker, the exhibition's scientific curator.
So General Lothar von Trotter ordered their chase. He systematically chased the Herero deeper and deeper into the desert, cordoning off water holes. So deprived of water or food, thousands of Herero in this way starved to death. After a month and a half of this tactics of chasing them, of keeping them away from water, Lothar von Trotter issued the Vernichtungsbefehl, the destruction order, ordering every Herero on German territory to be shot. They had no chance of getting back to their territory. They were locked in the desert where they would certainly die.
Esther Muyengwe says she grew up in Namibia hearing about the order.
Every Herero grandmother, grandparent was talking about there was an order. There was a deva to kill us all. A deva is an order. So everyone, they knew about it.
You can see a copy of von Trotta's extermination order in the exhibition. It was discovered by historian Jan Bart Gewalt, written in the Herero language. It's the most tangible proof that German colonial powers sought to cleanse the land of specific ethnic groups.
The extermination order signed by Lothar von Trotta in Herero, in Oshi Herero, was found by myself in the archives in Botswana, Gaborone, Botswana, in the National Archives. So essentially it had been carried across the Kalahari Desert after the battles in Namibia. It was distributed to Herero refugees, basically to tell them what was going to happen to them if they attempted to try and go back into German territory. They would be shot.
When missionaries began lobbying for the withdrawal of the order, it led to phase two of the genocide, says Léonore Faber-Yonker.
Unfortunately, when the order was withdrawn, the surviving Herero were collected and put in concentration camps. They were already in a weak state and they were made to work. This had lethal consequences.
The exhibition has several photos of the six concentration camps set up by the Germans. Esther Muyengwe's great-grandmother was raped there.
Like many of the other women who were raped, they tried to survive with that trauma and bring up these white children without fathers.
Some survived, but many died in the camps.
People were taken from wherever they were to all the concentration camps in Shark Island, in Windhoek, in Swakopmund, in Karipap, so that it's very difficult to say where exactly was this person, because during that time also, many of our people did not record what happened.
Some people starved to death on the camps. Their skulls were cleaned and sent back to Germany as part of early pseudo-scientific racial experiments that prefigured the work of Joseph Mengele, the Nazi angel of death, who sent body parts from death camps in Auschwitz back to Berlin. Ida Hoffmann says her great-grandmother saw people forced to take part in preparing the skulls.
They are saying that, you know, that their mother was telling them how they have seen, how they have to clean the huts, you know, that pull off the skins and the eyes, you know, all these ugly things. They were slaves, and you know how slaves are treated. They were starving from hunger. And the most bitter part was that, you know, that they, even if it's their son, if it's their husband, if it's their father or their uncle, their friend, whoever, they are the ones with the gun on them where they have to pull off those skins and have to do, you know, to clean that hut so that it can be packed in boxes and transferred to Germany. And the body that is that remain is the body where they have to dig the grave and bury their husband. But they cannot cry. They cannot stand against it because immediately they will be shot. That is the situation in which our people have done that.
In 2011, Germany returned 20 such skulls to Namibia. Esther Muyengwe believes Herero skulls are still in Germany.
The whole issue why the skulls were taken to Germany was to do scientific work on these skulls. For the scientists, the so-called scientists in Germany, to determine or to prove that the black people were inferior to the white person. So they did scientific work. We were asking the German government to give us some findings of the so-called research. Of course, the answer is that they have lost all the papers and so on, but I'm sure that they could not, you know, prove that blacks are inferior to white people.
In Swakopmund, on the site of what remains of one of the concentration camps, people come together in March each year. Herero and Nama have built two memorials in the desert there, and during the commemorations, a Herero chief speaks to the ancestors.
Genocide is really tangled or connected with the land issue in Namibia. So the communities that were most affected, the Herero and Nama, see it really as an extension of German efforts to literally remove them from the land, to make that land available as commercial farms.
Jeremy Sylvester, a historian at the University of Namibia, says the land is deeply marked by the memories of war. And yet such sites command little or no respect.
People travelling through Namibia, the communities that were affected, they can still see very much the remains and the memories of the war in the landscape. For example, if you're travelling with a Herero person past certain sites where chiefs were killed, they keep quiet and they take off their hat and they show respect. And many of the graves of the chiefs are now found on commercial farms. Two of the most notorious concentration camps where men, women and children were taken, Herero and Nama prisoners, they were taken to camps in Swakopmund and Luderitz, which are now two of the sort of tourism centres of Namibia. And there's really no sign of what happened at those sites. In Luderitz, the worst camp was on Shark Island. And actually, still to this day, tourists can camp on that site. So for me, it's very much like tourists being allowed to camp at Auschwitz or somewhere where in Europe. I mean, it's really unacceptable.
While there's still a lot of ignorance over what happened, there's little doubt that the extermination of Herero and Nama people was organized at the highest level. The exhibition shows small metal discs like dog tags that people over the age of 7 were forced to wear. They came from Jan Bart Gevaert's private collection and further strengthen the link between the extermination of Herero and Nama and the Jews in Europe.
This is the thing that is striking, the most striking about the Herero and Nama genocides is the bureaucratization and the complete noting down of the numbers of people killed and the number that was given to these people. All black people over the age of 7 in the German period after 1908 had to wear one of these two badges. And these badges were also linked to Arbeitsregister and Totenregister, so work registers and death registers. And this bureaucratization of mass murder is very much a link.
While Berlin has publicly recognized and apologized for the massacres, it has so far ruled out financial compensation for the victims' descendants. It argues that Namibia has benefited from hundreds of millions of euros Germany paid in development aid since it gained independence from South Africa in 1990. But the chief of Namibia's indigenous Herero people said recently that the money has never reached the victims' groups. They continue to seek reparations. Special thanks today go to RFI's history programme, La Marche du Monde. From me, Alison Hurd, bye for now.